From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where we hear from politicians and experts on the issues of the day.
Democracy 2025 is an initiative by the Museum of Australian Democracy and the University of Canberra with the aim of stimulating a national conversation on how we can bridge the trust divide in Australian politics. As members of Parliament are key voices in the debate about trust, the project undertook a survey of federal MPs and the results have just been released. This survey was done shortly before the last election and it had a response rate of some 43%. Questions covered the MPs' attitude to democracy, the faults they saw in the present political system, and how they thought it could be improved. Their views were then compared with earlier work on the public's attitudes. Two of the authors of the report, Professor Mark Evans and Professor Jerry Stoker, both from the University of Canberra, join us today to discuss the findings and how they can be used to address the trust divide. Mark, this research finds a gap between the perceptions of politicians and those of the public about the political system. The politicians are more satisfied with things than the public. Perhaps this is not surprising, but how important is it?
I mean, it does show that there's a disconnection between the thoughts of politicians and the thoughts of everyday Australians. Although I think it's still important to acknowledge that almost 40% of politicians are saying that they are dissatisfied with Australia's democratic arrangements, which if you think about them as the sort of key insiders in the system, is a large number of people that aren't satisfied. So although in the survey findings that we can find there are different attitudinal systems at work here, at the same time we are finding politicians in support of democratic renewal.
And the overall figures are something over 6 out of 10 ordinary citizens are dissatisfied, and about 4 out of 10 of the politicians.
That's right. That's right.
So even though quite a few parliamentarians are concerned about the system, do you think that the gap between the public and the parliamentarians is important, is a worry?
Well, yes, in the sense that the public obviously identify the problem with the behaviour of politicians and with the work of particular institutions, whereas the politicians identify the problem with the media and also with the public not understanding the nature of politics. They're not really focusing so much on themselves. That suggests that there's a big chasm, really, between the views of everyday citizens and politicians. And consequently, politicians really focus on the need for media reform. And they do acknowledge, basically, that there has to be better behaviour within Parliament. But most of the reforms that they emphasise are reforms that are about making politicians more accountable, particularly to their electorates, rather than, for example, extending the participation of citizens within decision-making and within political life in Australia.
Now, we'll come back in more detail to that, but, Jerry, you've done a lot of research internationally. How does the Australian situation compare with that in other Western countries?
I think that it's absolutely crystal clear that these issues, the issues of whether democracy is working well enough, whether it can be renewed, whether or not we can actually find reforms that will improve it, are actually shared in almost all of the advanced democracies. So that debate is live there. I think where we're in a particular advantage here is that actually in terms of research, primarily most of the research has been on the attitudes of citizens themselves. And here I think Australians stand out as perhaps being a little bit more towards the untrusting end of the spectrum, a little bit more negative, which is in many ways quite surprising given the relative economic success of Australia as a country over the last 30 years, in that people kind of often imagine that if you've got a decent economic performance, people are going to back the way that your politics is working. But clearly people are kind of demanding a different way of doing politics in Australia. What we can't be so clear about in terms of our comparisons is that the uniqueness of this research is it enables us to compare what elites think with what citizens think. Now, that's not being done too often internationally, and that's the value of the research. And I think it helps us to kickstart the process of reform as well, because you can actually see where there's connections between what elites might be prepared to buy into and what citizens want to see.
Do you have any thoughts about why Australians are more distrustful than people elsewhere?
I think that the explanations probably lie in the way in which people are comfortable with being critical and challenging within the Australian context, because I think it's a relatively benign environment. I think undoubtedly it's got to do something with the performance of the political system over the last decade, where I think that any observer would be hard-pressed to argue that it was politics constructed and argued at its best. And then I think the third element is that it's a real prospect of reform. There's an opportunity for reform. So I think people are prepared to speak out saying, well, we could be doing things differently.
Mark, can we drill down on the different perceptions by politicians and citizens when it comes to their satisfaction in our institutions and what they like and dislike? Can you just elaborate on that?
Well, in terms of what they have in common, they both like the fact that we have free and fair elections. They both like compulsory voting in the sense that it provides a sense of rights and obligations of citizenship. Although I should say as well that compulsory voting is unpopular, much more unpopular within Liberal voters than Labour and National voters. They both like the provision of freedom of speech, association and assembly. Politicians, however, emphasise much more the political participation aspects of Australian democracy. They believe that the political system is accessible to citizens, whereas citizens are a lot more quizzical about that. But they have very different views on why we have declining trust and democratic satisfaction. So citizens tend to focus on the problem of adversarial politics. So they don't like conflict-driven politics. They don't understand why they can't be more cross-partisan conversations and more consensus-building politics. They don't think that the political system has been very well led in recent times. So they identify the problem of poor leadership and they emphasise the poor behaviour of politicians. Politicians tend to focus on the short-term nature of the political system. So the focus on the three-year electoral term as a major throttle against a more progressive politics and the development of a longer-term view on public policy. Politicians focus on the problem of integrity, but they tend to focus on issues of transparency and accountability rather than the poor behaviour of politicians. But the major issue that they focus on is media misrepresentation. So they believe that the media distorts the democratic process. I should also say that in the open questions as well that we asked, there was a critique within the politicians of the party machine. So the view was that it was the contemporary party machine that was disconnecting politicians from their communities and from the community linkage role that they play.
So just taking up the point you make about the politicians being very critical of the media, it would suggest that the campaign that's just been launched by the media organisations for more media protections in the system following the raids on News Corp journalists and the ABC mightn't fall on very receptive ears, doesn't it?
It does indeed. I mean, look, this is the big puzzle obviously we need the media to provide an essential check and balance within our liberal democracy. But the politicians believe that there needs to be more responsible reporting that focuses on policy rather than on personalities. And there lies the key contestation.
Now, in terms of reforms to the system, how wide do you see the gulf between what the politicians think is desirable and acceptable indeed, and what the public want?
Well, there are some issues where the public and politicians are very much on the same page. So for example, around the regulation of campaign expenditure and political donations, right? There's very, very strong support both within the public and within the political class in support of reform in that area. So 76% of politicians are in support of reform in that area, and a similar percentage of the public are in support of that as well. There are also some reforms that are about making politicians more accountable to their electorates and allowing them to play that community linkage role better. So, for example, 58% are in support of the provision of local as well as federal manifestos during elections. Now, ironically, we put in a reform around e-petitions to Parliament. And of course, there is already some facility to make e-petitions to Parliament. And 54% of politicians are in favour of extending that. So that's kind of a participatory device. There's also a big emphasis on extending the role of ordinary party members and voters in terms of choosing party leaders and election candidates. So again, that is obviously emphasising a more participatory role. And then there's the focus on the ability for parliamentarians to vote less on party lines and to have more free votes. So there's 46% who are in favour of that. So look, there are some reforms that are about improving representative democracy and local accountability. However, if you look at the big participatory reforms that tend to be around things like, you know, how do we ensure that the Australian Parliament is more representative of the people that it represents? So, for example, there's very little support for affirmative action in terms of Indigenous representation or affirmative action on the basis of gender or ethnicity, which stands out in contrast to other liberal democracies. There's also no support really for lowering the voting age, for example. So on the broader issues of representation, there's no support. And then when we look at the sort of reforms that may make a real difference to the behaviour of politicians. So, for example, 72% of Australians are in support of the right to recall MPs for re-election if they fail to provide effective representation during the parliamentary term. Well, they're obviously dead set against that. Australians are in support of performance review for their politicians. So they basically argue really that politicians should be subject to the same modern working practices that all Australians are subject to. But 72% are against performance review for politicians. 64% are against greater use of citizens' juries and deliberative forums to solve complex policy problems. So, for example, any reforms that dilute the power of politicians, politicians are opposed to.
Surprise, surprise. Jerry, can we just talk through this concept of citizens' juries? Explain it to us and tell us something about how it has been used in some places and what are the advantages and the disadvantages of it?
Okay. Well, a citizens' jury is a way of engaging ordinary members of the public in a conversation about a public policy issue. And the essence of it, I think, is that those people who are asked to join the jury are chosen at random in order to get a kind of broad selection of people who are kind of beyond the ordinary suspect. So one of the issues about most public participation schemes is it tends to attract people who are interested in public participation. The attraction of the citizens' jury is a bit like the juries that we are used to deal with court-based issues. It's a kind of requirement of citizenship that when you're asked to participate, you should participate. And that random selection principle is applied to a citizens' jury as well. Obviously, people still have to say yes to participating, but nevertheless, you get a broader cross-section of the population involved in the conversation. And then I think the second crucial thing is the processes involved. So in a citizens' jury, the attraction is that people aren't just asked, well, what do you think? Because that's obviously a difficulty if they haven't had time to reflect and to gain evidence on the issue. So during the course of a jury itself, people are presented evidence by a mixed range of different experts. They're given opportunities to critically think through the issues. So the big attraction of a citizens' jury is it's not people's off-the-head responses, but more their responses once they have evidence, time to think, and then, of course, crucially, time to debate it with their fellow citizens too. So people will maybe change their minds or understand the issues in different ways when they hear from different perspectives. And citizens' juries have been, I think, now widely practiced within many different democracies, and they usually involve sometimes, 20 people, sometimes 200 people. In some instances, they've even gone up to 1,000 people constructed in different ways and forms. There's normally a set of recommendations that comes out of the citizens' juries, and then it's normally up to the government of the day to respond to those recommendations in some kind of way. And one of the challenges of citizens' juries is, I think, getting that connection between what the jury comes up with and some real response in the political system itself. And the other, I think, challenge is making sure that somehow or other what these citizens come up with actually reflects the wider views of citizens in general.
Now, there have been some small experiments in Australia.
Yes. So in South Australia and in Victoria and here in the ACT, there's been a number of small-scale experiments asking people to think about issues as wide as whether nuclear waste should be part of the future of the economy of South Australia, to thinking about how to improve issues of water supply, to thinking about how to deal with, in one case, in Geelong, the replacement of a local government system. So people actually debated what kind of local government they would like.
And what was the experience, the results, the assessment of how all that went?
Okay, so the overwhelming result in terms of the people who participate themselves is they are fantastically enthusiastic about the engagement. They love it, and they love the chance that they had the chance not only to give their opinion, but give their opinion once they'd had access to experts and evidence and an opportunity to reflect. So I think the overwhelming positive comes out from the people engaged themselves. Where I think we're not so able to be positive is that it's not crystal clear that the general public, for example, would trust a citizens' jury to make a decision. And we're also still in the early stages of connecting citizens' juries to a wider process of political engagement and participation.
And have the governments involved taken any notice of the results?
Oh, yeah. I think the answer is, 9 times out of 10, they have to take notice of them, because in a way, that's part of the promise to the citizens' jury. But of course, the gap between actually what the citizens' jury recommend and what comes out at the end of the day may still be there. But you could maybe argue that that's a perfectly legitimate political outcome. But yes, I think it would hardly be worth constructing a citizens' jury unless you gave people some idea that their time and commitment was going to be rewarded with some kind of response.
Now, Mark, people's disillusionment with politics and politicians has led to a surge of interest in independents, who sometimes cast themselves as non-politicians. But are the problems here, for example, the electoral system for the House of Representatives really works against independents, even popular ones, getting into Parliament? But more widely, can independents fill the role traditionally that major parties have filled?
Well, this is the big question, really. And as you know, we have an ongoing focus group program. So we've literally just finished 34 focus groups in which we asked these questions to everyday Australians. And look, the way that we've asked citizens is we've asked them to characterize what they view to be the dimensions of a good politician. And interestingly, these dimensions tend to be the characteristics of independents. So, for example, they emphasise the importance of integrity. So politicians that are honest, open and accessible. They emphasise the importance of empathy. Politicians that focus on the issues that they care most about, right? And have a sense of attachment to the community. Then there's the dimension which we call delivery, and this is where the puzzle plays out. Because delivery is about the ability to deliver concrete gains for the community. And here you see more contestation. There are some everyday citizens that basically say, well, look, we're only going to get real material resources for our community if we back a candidate that's linked to a main political party. Because independents aren't going to have the influence up on the hill, you know, that politically networked politicians will have. So there's a big contestation over that within communities. However, we've seen the way in which politicians like Cathy McGowan has used this to her benefit in Indi, for example. And obviously she's handed over now to Helen Haynes. But Cathy put a big focus on the educative function of the politician. So she would bring local people up to Canberra and she would educate them in terms of how they could go about lobbying the system and building networks of support within the system. So I think Voice for Indi would argue that actually if independents play that role well, then they can have an influence. And of course, where increasingly you have minority government, we know historically throughout Australian political history, independents have held the balance of power. So we know basically that for independents that
especially in the Senate.
Exactly. So we know that independents that display those characteristics of a good politician, which are about integrity, empathy, delivery and loyalty, will do well at the ballot box.
But in a way, this is a bit of a divide between the micro and the macro, isn't it? Because if people want to vote for, say, reform of the tax system or big changes, it's only the major parties that can guarantee, if they win the election, that that will happen. An independent has no power in that sense, except in a minority parliament, and you can't predict that ahead.
But only if they have the capacity to engage in rainbow coalition building type politics. I mean, what we know is that the major problem that we have now in contemporary politics is the polarisation issue. So those parties that are able to build coalitions of support on specific issues across parties, across single issue groups, etc., are going to be the more successful parties going forward. Those parties that focus on the old politics, the traditional ways of mobilising support around some notion of a core vote, those parties are going to struggle really to win the war of ideas. So my view basically really is that civil society is changing, the citizen is changing, the citizen is becoming much more interested in single issues, is much less wedded to a political party than in the past, is much more likely to do a political dance around elections depending on which party is best representing their interest. And that's why we're seeing much greater support for a consensus-building politics rather than adversarial politics.
On the other hand, if you think of the support for independence and look at the Senate, you can argue that independents can hold disproportionate power. For example, Jackie Lambie at the moment, the independent from Tasmania, has a great deal of power. Is that really promoting a democratic system, or is that, in fact, the reverse of democracy?
Well, I think Tom Stoppard, the playwright, once said, you know, democracy is in the numbers, right?
This is the power of one.
Yeah. So this is the reality of the situation that we're faced with democracy. However, I think democracy is in the communication, right? And those politicians that are able to have an open and honest conversation with everyday Australians and actually persuade and use what we call soft power as a resource, those types of politicians, I think, can be really successful in this present climate. It's just that most politicians don't really focus on the power of persuasion. They don't focus on building coalitions at the moment, coalitions of support. They're still focusing on traditional old politics, old adversarial politics. So I'm a little bit more positive about this, but I think politicians need to improve the way in which they communicate.
Well, Jerry, just on this question of communication, it does seem to me, often talking to them, that politicians are a bit behind the digital age. They're very much focused on, for example, the old media, not the new media. Are you surprised that they don't use modern communication, social media, better than they do? Of course, they do to an extent use it, but not perhaps most effectively.
I'm surprised that they're not more aware of the issues raised by the digital transformation of politics. Not so surprised because in generational terms, where most politicians are, you might expect them to not be at the forefront of using
a lot of them are quite young, though. Well, certainly if we think compared to the United States, they seem extremely young.
I know, but I think that there's a difference between whether you're a kind of digital native or whether you're learning digital practices later on in your life. I definitely count as the same.
You mean
category.
We need teenagers in the parliament?
Yeah. Well, but I think that it's surprising they're not discussing some of the issues thrown up by digital politics.
For example?
Well, I think that the attractive part of it is the way in which mobilisation and engagement can cut across time and distance much more comfortably and much more straightforwardly. That's the positive side of it. But I think there are two negative issues definitely worth reflecting on. The one is the so-called echo chamber argument, which is that in the digital world, all that happens is you tend to talk to or relate to people who hold exactly the same opinions as you. And I think in a democracy, that's really problematic because it means that people kind of feel that everyone thinks exactly the same as them. And that's clearly not the case. But I think the second and obvious thing is that digital is going to have a massive effect on election campaigns in the future. We've already seen a lot of discussion and debate about its impact on the American presidential elections, but it also clearly had an impact on some of the European elections and potentially even on the Brexit vote in the UK as well. And that ability to understand what automated messages, bots, and engagement by artificial intelligence is going to do to our democracy should be part of our debate, yes.
And Mark, what about the role of the public service in going forward in dealing with some of these trust issues? Do you think that governments haven't used the public service positively enough to reinforce trust?
Look, I think that historically there's been a lack of strategic alignment between the political class and the bureaucratic class around reform. It's interesting that we're still waiting for the outcomes of the APS review process, despite the fact that it's common knowledge that that process was completed probably about 5 weeks ago now. We know from the interim report that there were certain issues where there is strategic alignment between the Prime Minister and the APS review process. And that's obviously around the announcement around Services Australia and the need to improve the quality of public service delivery and the need to use public service delivery as a space for trust building between government and the citizen. So the APS and the Prime Minister seem to be on the same page in relation to that part of the reform process. But then there's another part of the reform process which is about reaffirming Westminster fundamentals and particularly the independence of the Australian Public Service. And there is this very strongly held view that particularly the appointments of secretaries has become more and more politicised in recent times. And even at the deputy secretary level, ministers are interfering in terms of the appointment of people at that level. So the view basically is that the APS has been increasingly politicised. And certainly in the interim review findings, there was a focus on the importance of reaffirming the independence of the APS. Now, then we had a couple of speeches by the Prime Minister. There was one particular one where the Prime Minister focused on the argument that that the government did policy, the APS did delivery, which is completely at odds with the Westminster way of doing things. In other words, there seems to be some contestation around the role of the APS going forward, and particularly the independent role. But there seems to be some commonality around the importance of opening up the APS, making it more responsive to the citizen, moving away from the class system of policy at the top and delivery at the bottom, and developing more integrated service systems. And obviously, the Prime Minister is also a huge champion of more collaborative governance between federal, state and territory government as well.
And of course, good service delivery is important in promoting citizen trust. Now, just to finish, I want to ask you both very briefly to summarise whether this research work that you've been involved in has made you more optimistic or pessimistic about our democracy for the years ahead. Firstly, Jerry.
I think I'm going to go for the more optimistic line, and I think primarily because what it does show is that although there are clearly differences between the way that citizens analyse the problem and the way that politicians analyse the problem, there is some common ground there. And it seems to me that to get a dynamic for reform, you need both existing politicians and citizens to buy into some of the same dynamic of change. And I would be saying that it's great that this research tells us that there are some shared reforms, especially around the way in which political parties and elections are financed, maybe some other reforms in terms of the way that the representative process works to give greater scope for a non-partisan politics. So I think these are really positive things which I would want to feel you could build on. I think the reason why I'd be jumping up and down saying let's take this opportunity is because the issue of trust, I think, in some other democracies has already been weaponized by politicians. So if you think about the way that Trump plays trust issues, or the way in which trust issues are being played out in the Brexit debate in the United Kingdom, you can see that actually politicians can take trust as a problem, but they can also take it as an opportunity to make their arguments and win elections and bring over supporters. At the moment, that's not happening in Australia. There's a fantastic opportunity to actually react positively to the concerns that are clearly shared between politicians and citizens.
And Mark?
Well, I would reinforce what Jerry said, first of all, by saying that it's interesting that a lot of the reforms that we're talking about here aren't particularly radical in the context of processes of democratic modernisation. They're about strengthening existing practices. So in other words, the reform project should be easier in that sense. But I would also add to Jerry's comments on being optimistic, because we're also doing some amazing work with young Australians at the moment. So we will have the largest sample of young Australians in terms of how they understand and imagine their democracy.
This is part of the General Democracy Project.
Yeah, this is part of the Democracy 2025 project. And in contrast to the Lowy survey, we are finding, and we have a much larger sample, we are finding that young Australians are interested in politics. They embrace democratic values. They are very much interested in key liberal issues in terms of reform and in terms of public policy. They are highly educated about the nature of politics, and they're up for a more participatory role. So my view is that the next generation of voters are actually highly invested in our political system, which I think is a very optimistic note.
Well, on that up note, we'll conclude. Thank you both very much for sharing the survey results with us. That's all from our podcast today. We'll be back with another interview soon. Thank you to my producer, Rashna Farooq. And I must apologise if there was any noise during this podcast. We did have quite a contribution from the bird population around Parliament House, which were very active and very noisy, even through the thick walls of the building. Bye-bye for now.
Our theme music is by Lee Rosevier. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.